It's Vikings Purple Past on the Fan.
Bumps it out to the left of the 15. Sprints inside the 5. Touchdown!
Now, celebrating the great past years of Vikings football, here's the Fan's Mark Rosen.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Purple Past. Mark Rosen, your host here on KFAN. And our special guest tonight, one of the classiest guys I've ever come across with the Minnesota Vikings organization. He's now the senior consultant with the Minnesota Vikings, longtime coach, to coach at Stanford, coach with the Vikings, coached everywhere. Paul Wiggin. Paul, thanks so much for spending some time with us this evening.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, Mark. Thank you.
You're talking to us from the Sports Authority studio over there at Winter Park. Nice little digs you have over there. Things have, I think technology's changed a little bit, and get a chance to talk to you like this today.
That's right. This is dramatic change.
Isn't
it? You know, when I first got here 27 years ago, I don't think they even thought about anything like this.
No, I mean, let's just start with this part of the conversation. Think about the way, and I could go back to when you were playing days as well. Maybe folks would be interested in this because, of course, you played with the Cleveland Browns for many, many years. How plays were signaled in. Now you got radio transmitters and helmets and coaches doing all sorts of stuff. I mean, you guys didn't have any of this stuff. I mean, when you were playing, how did you signal plays and the quarterback just call all the plays?
Well, in those days, if you recall, and yeah, this is before your time.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you said that.
But Paul Brown in 1955 tried a radio system into the helmets.
No kidding.
Believe it or not, it goes back that far. He also picked up calls from boats out in the ocean and everything else. So they had to file it.
Shortwave radios?
Yeah, they picked up everything, and they had to finally file it. But Paul Brown was famous for the rotating guards. He used to run the guards back and forth in those days when I played for the Browns, and that's how they did it. But, you know, in reality, though, Paul was way ahead of the game with regard to that. He was trying not to run those guards to death and keep his two best guards on the field, and that was his radio plan, but radio wave plan, but it didn't work.
You were drafted, 1956, is that correct? Sixth round? Yeah,
I was. I was drafted in, I'll tell you how important I was in the draft. I was asleep, and I got awakened by one of my fraternity brothers at Stanford, and he said, "Is there a team called the Cleveland Browns?" And I said, "Why would you wake me up to ask me if there was a team called the Cleveland Browns?" He said, "Well, I think you were drafted by them." So that's how important I was in the draft back in those days.
Well, you were, the sixth round? I mean, that does seem like an interesting round to be drafted in. So I'm sure you got just a huge bonus to sign with Cleveland that year.
Yeah, I got a $500 bonus, and that was the most money I'd ever seen in my life. And but in reality, I didn't hear from anybody in the Browns for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks I got a letter from Paul, said, "Go ahead, you've got another year at Stanford. Go ahead and play the fifth year."
Wow.
And then we'll look at you a year from now.
So you did. You graduated from Stanford in 1957. Then you went on for an 11-year career as a defensive end with the Cleveland Browns. That's the way
that's
it worked
right,
out.
Yeah.
So you had some. Look, I'm just throwing names out there. A guy named Jim Brown was on your team, I assume.
We were rookies together.
Holy cow.
Yeah, we were rookies together on the same team.
And was he right away, I mean, arguably to this day, people look at Jim Brown, even though they didn't, maybe those who weren't even alive to see him play, arguably the greatest running back of all time. You can have that argument, but did you see that in him? Did everyone see that in him right away when he came out of Syracuse and was a rookie?
You know, I played in a game prior to reporting to camp called the College All-Star Game.
Sure.
They don't have it anymore. And Jim and I were both in that game, and Jim didn't seem to put on much of a show in that game, and I just thought he was another running back from that standpoint. And it seems like the minute he arrived at the training camp with the Browns, he caught fire. I mean, he was unbelievable from the start, and he was as electrifying probably for the fans in Cleveland as say Adrian is here, because every time Adrian gets the ball, I mean, people just start to get tense and start to get ready to get out of their seats. And I mean, he was that kind of a player.
Talking to Paul Wiggin, senior consultant for pro personnel with the Minnesota Vikings. We're talking about his early days with the Cleveland Browns as a player. What kind of guy was Jim Brown at that time? We always, I think, thought of him as someone who was kind of moody and sort of stayed to himself, but was he a good teammate?
He was a great teammate. I mean, that side of it was perfect. He was a bit aloof. I mean, he wasn't Mr. Wonderful all the time, but fairly well-liked. I mean, he was a guy who was kind of to himself, But when he got ready, when he got dressed, and when he put on that uniform, it was all business. And we respected him as a teammate. And believe it or not, in those days, it was a fairly cohesive football team that the Browns had. You know, I played there 11 years, and we had 11 winning seasons during that time. Not because I was there, but because we did have guys like Jim Brown. But we did have we had more than just good players or whatever. We had a feeling about each other that was pretty neat, and I really enjoyed that.
Well, all modesty aside, you did make the Pro Bowl a couple times, and you were a big part of that defensive line. You helped win the National Football League title in 1964. You shut out the Baltimore Colts, and I assume Mr. Unitas was playing at that time?
He was. It was, and for me, one of the great days of my life. You know, not so much because I was any more of a factor than anyone else. The great day because as a team that cared for one another, we walked off the field as feeling that for at least one day we were the best in the world. And there's something about that. There's something about being the very best. And to do it with people you care about, you can't get any better than that.
We've heard the discussion over the years. I mentioned Jim Brown's name, and I think you're in perfect position to talk about it. You mentioned Adrian Peterson. You've seen all the greats, you know, Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, go down those you know, Eric Dickerson, Gale Sayers. I mean, what was Brown the best in your mind, or is it just apples and oranges? Difficult to compare.
Well, it's a little bit difficult because if you were saying taking a Sayers, for example, he was clearly as elusive as you could possibly be as a running back. Unbelievable skill as a runner, but just skilled in the sense of just poetry in motion. Jim Brown was more of a scrapper. He would take you on and beat you off your body and keep on going. I can remember one of Jim Brown's run. It was a 2-yard run into the goal, into the end zone, and he beat off about five guys to get there, and then went in for the touchdown. I mean, it was just one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen, and that was what he was about. And probably Adrian is closer to Jim as a player than he would be to a Sayers, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Sayers had those elusive moves. You couldn't get a hand on him, that's for sure. And as you've watched Adrian develop here with the Minnesota Vikings, the one thing you always hear, I guess, is that can he continue to sort of, he dishes out a lot of punishment, but take it as a running back who, you know, they pretty much have pretty short shelf lives. And what you see about Adrian Peterson, do you think he can be one of the best ever?
I think he has that ability. I think we need to get 8 and 9 out of the box to give him a chance because he's getting machine gunned. But in reality, he has greatness all written all over him. And I know he takes a lot of collision licks. I mean, he really does. He runs with that style. If you shook hands with him or put your hand on his shoulder, it's like putting it on a piece of steel. I mean, it's just he's just an unbelievable physical specimen. So much like Jim was. Jim was a chiseled looking guy. If you saw him, if you remember him.
Oh, sure.
They used to, when he made movies later, they used to tear his shirt off early in the movie so people could see what kind of a structure he had.
Well, he was like a great lacrosse player before. I mean, people really hadn't heard much about lacrosse, but wasn't he like a superstar in that sport?
He was considered at this point in time in history the greatest lacrosse player that ever played and changed the rules.
Wow.
What he used to do is he'd take the net, put the ball in the net, put the net on his chest and run over people and just get to the net and then throw it in there. I mean, I don't understand lacrosse, all the parts of it, but Jim, they had to do it. They couldn't put the thing in their chest and do it.
No.
They had to juggle it a little bit, which kind of splits your concentration so you're not just flat running over people.
Yeah. Hey, this is a big Sunday coming up for the Minnesota Vikings against the Green Bay Packers. It's always a special game, but it's also going to be a very special day for Chris Dolman. He's going into the Vikings Ring of Honor, a man that you know quite well and coached. And tell us about Chris Dolman's skill set and what made him so special as a Viking defensive end.
Well, he's gifted. He came down the assembly line, a great player. I mean, he was a linebacker when he got here and went to defensive end in his first year. And what Chris Dolman had, he had incredible get-off. He had incredible body lean.
Mm-hmm.
And he had balance and body control at the time and place was special. And the reason I say it was special, it was a time when the quarterbacks were not as deep. They were starting to do that quicker rhythm stuff and step up and throw. So they were, instead of being at the seven-step drop, it was the three- and five-step stuff. And Chris Dolman could maintain that big body of his in a way that he didn't run by the quarterback. He could come right in the back door and raise thunder with him. And, yeah. You know, a good example of that, Mark, is he has 45 caused fumbles. I mean, I don't think they keep track of them. I mean, if they do, I don't know that anyone's ever come close to that.
45. I don't think they have.
Yeah, and he and most of them were coming in the back door, knocking down the quarterback's hand.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they never saw him. Yeah,
and it's there's no one in the Hall of Fame, in the NFL Hall of Fame, that could do what Chris could do along that particular way. He had a great ability to rush the passer.
Do you think the fact the Vikings didn't get to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl during his time is the reason why he's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
You know, all of those factors come into it, you know, and I think he's been victimized a little bit by Gary Zimmerman, Chris Carter, the Randall McDaniel, John Randall. Those all have gone in. We probably have more going into the Hall of Fame in the last 5 or 6 years than any team in football. I don't know. I haven't looked at that, but it seems like that. And, yeah. And I think he's just waiting his turn, I think. And I feel sorry for him because he was a great player. You look at his statistics, any of his statistics, not the 150 sacks, the recovered fumbles, the any category, and he is ranked in history, not ranked with the Vikings, but ranked in football history, is sub 10 in that. And, that's Hall of Fame stuff written all over it, and I don't know how in the world you could ever not put him in the Hall of Fame, and I'm certain down the road that's going to happen.
And welcome back to Purple Past on the Fan here. Mark Rosen, your host, with Paul Wiggin, senior consultant for Pro Personnel with the Minnesota Vikings, longtime defensive end. We've been talking about with the Cleveland Browns, along with being a great coach as well. And let's sort of segue into this year's defensive line. And I know Leslie Frazier was none too happy with the performance of his line on Monday and on Sunday night against the Chicago Bears, Paul, and we've seen a very aggressive line, one of the best in pass rushing. It had to be disappointing to him and to you to sort of see that performance on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think it was. I think there were a lot of disappointments Sunday night, and I think the defensive line certainly feels as if they did their part in some of the things that didn't happen in the game that should have happened. And you know what? This is a quality defensive line and a proud defensive line. Sometimes, Mark, I think they're just games, and you've seen it over the years. You have the greatest of players. You could have had the Purple People Eaters, and they have a day where it just doesn't click for some reason. I don't know why that happens. It doesn't make sense to me, but it does, and it does happen. And I think this was one of those weeks. But I don't think there's a lot of people, offensive tackles in football, that want to line up against any one of our defensive ends. And I think they're great players. I think they're – and they'll show it. Particularly Jared Allen. He is a he probably, along with Peppers and two or three others, are very close to being the chairman of the board with regard to defensive end play. He's a very, very talented guy and very, very much an important part of our football, important part of the Viking family, I just think that this team will respond to that. I think they are disappointed in themselves. I saw the Bears the week before were just brutal. Just didn't produce hardly anything against the Detroit Lions. And, you know, we caught them on a rebounding week, and they gave us everything they could give us. I am very, very hopeful that's exactly what we're going to get from not only our defensive line, but from our football team next week, because I think we are a football team that truly cares about the coaching staff. They care about each other, and they care about being a Minnesota Viking, and I think that they'll respond and come back use that as an impetus to get back on track, because that certainly wasn't representative of what the Minnesota Vikings are. It really wasn't. That was one of those off days, I guess, and everybody has them, and you can't justify them, but they do exist.
You mentioned Jared Allen. One of the biggest compliments I think have been paid Jared is that he was almost born in a different era, that he would have been perfect with your defensive line, the Cleveland Browns in the late 60s. Yes, he's being paid a ton of money right now, but he has that sort of old school mentality, old soul about the game of football. Does he strike you that way?
Yes, he's very much that. He is constantly trying to find a way to win, and I admire guys like that. I would have loved to have played with him. I would have loved to have been maybe the other end. I wouldn't have gotten much publicity, you know, because he'd have probably got most of it. But I would have loved to have played because he plays football like the game is supposed to be played, and I love that about him. He's a devil-may-care guy, and he's, to me, he's one of my very favorite. Over the years, like, he'd be, to me, if I were coaching him, he would be like a Dolman, you know, a mm-hmm. guy that you love to coach because you know that when you need him the most, they're going to be at their best, and that's what he's about. That's what Chris Dolman was about.
You mentioned Chris Dolman again. Is it true that you use a lot of the film techniques that Dolman did that currently are being utilized by some of the players to instruct them on how to get to the quarterback and how to maximize their moves?
Yeah, you do. You have to, when you're coaching defensive line, you have to know what someone's capable of. And, you know, when I played, there was a guy named Deacon Jones, and I would have liked to have been like Deacon Jones. There was no chance. I mean, he did things that my body couldn't even think about. And so you take things, but you talk about, I use the term backdoor a lot when I talk about pass rush. And I got the term backdoor from Chris Dolman. It wasn't his term. Mm-hmm. I realized that's what he was capable of doing. And that's why when I'm looking at a great player, I try to find how well he does that. You know, when I'm looking at a film of an opponent and talk about some of the things he's capable of doing, that's what I try to do. Chris did things that only special athletes could do. And so you took things that he did. You know, Chris, I didn't coach Chris a lot, to be honest with you. I tweaked things from time mm-hmm, to time. Mm-hmm. And when you tweaked them, you kind of talked about them. Chris and I would sit and say, you know, Chris, if you might try that. And he said, well, I don't think I can do that. Well, okay, then, but you might want to try it. So and that was the kind of the way Chris and I worked together as a coach player.
You got a red-hot quarterback, the hottest quarterback in football, coming to town this Sunday with the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know what his game is all about. He just lights it up with a dozen receivers he uses. The game has sort of evolved, Paul, has it not, into you have to be able to, whether it's Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees, go down the line, you have to be able to move the ball and strike quickly. The rules have changed that way. Is that the way the game has gone, and the Vikings have to counter that offensively as well as time goes on, whether it be Christian Ponder or whomever else is going to take that job?
Yeah, I think there's a little truth to that. I think when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers, I think you'll notice I would challenge the fans to look at how quick his rhythm is, how quick that ball comes mm-hmm. out of there. They once said in the Favre that there was rarely a pass that was over 2.7 seconds. I never time things. You can almost get a full run at a quarterback.
Yeah.
And without somebody blocking you, and you're lucky to get there in time to sack him. So if they're on target, if his primary receiver is open and he gets the ball out of the pocket, you're going to have a hard time sacking him. And that's kind of been what they've been about. And I think that's what the new game is about today. It's different. Like I said, I was talking about a seven-step drop. You don't see that anymore.
Sure.
You see a lot of, and we're going to see, you'll see a lot of play action. They want to be able to run the football, get you a little off balance with their ability to run the football, and they're not great at it, but good at it. And then they counter it with play action passing. And so the rhythm of it is really, is difficult for pass rushing, and so we're going to have a challenge this week. But still, if you need to harass the quarterback, you need to let him know that if it isn't open, and that you're going to be in the ear hole of his helmet, and that's what pass rush is all about. And we've got to prepare on that basis.
Well, you coached one of the great ones of all time in college at Stanford, and John Elway. Would you describe him the same way you're talking about Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I would say I think over time it'll probably be pretty much the same. John Elway, to me, I borrow a phrase from somebody else, he never really lost a football game. He just ran out of time. He was a great, great competitor. And I think Aaron's got that. I think he's got that kind of thing. I think he's like Elway. He seems to be a positive influence with his teammates. I think they seem to want to play with him and for him. And I think Elway was that kind of a player. great player. And so in all honesty, one of the privileges in my life, and I never told him one thing about quarterbacking because I don't understand a lot about it, but but I did have, I was a head coach, and he was one of my players. And boy, what a treat that was to be able to coach a guy like that.
Well, you were at Stanford for a number of years, and of course, it's pretty hard to have not have a conversation with you and talk about the play. It happened in 1982. I know it's probably one of those things you're tired of talking about, but we've all seen it on television a zillion times. I think Joe Capp was on the other sidelines against Cal. The band, the lateral five times. We've seen it 1,000 times. How many times have you watched it, and how many times have you shook your head saying, I still can't believe that play happened?
Well, you're right. All of the above, believe me. And you know what? It was funny. About the first year after that, I had about 30 writers. And then after the 5 year, there were about 20 writers that called me. And then there was about 10 years, there were about 8 writers that called me. And then we got to the 25th year after the play, and I had back to 40 writers, you know. So it was just, it's a historic play. It's a play that no matter where you put down the top 10 related to plays, it's one of them. And I try to take the approach now. I if it hadn't been for the play, I probably wouldn't have my 27 years with the Minnesota Vikings. And I'm going to tell you, Mark, they have been wonderful years. Yeah, this is a great organization, great people. It's a wonderful part of the Twin Cities, and I was very fortunate to be here. So I try to look at my life half full rather than half empty, and so I look back at that and say, okay, Paul, you were part of history. I'm not real thrilled that the other guy was Joe Capp, but there's not much I can do about it.
Hey, in our closing 2 minutes, I'm not asking you to weigh in on the political side of this, but the stadium issue is coming to a head. It looks like we may have a special session in November, and you've seen and been involved in a lot of outdoor football. How important do you think it is to this community, to the Minnesota Vikings, to have that again, to have the tailgating space, which I think Minnesota invented tailgating back in the early 70s, to have that opportunity for football fans to enjoy that again?
I think it's probably as important as anyone can imagine. I don't think you realize the value, what the Vikings, or what the Twins, or what the, but let's talk about what the Vikings mean to people in this area. I mean, it's a critical part of a great city. It fits into it so well. It's such a big part of it, and we're in a division that fits the community in such a way. You know, it's the kind of the black and blue kind of a thing, and I just have a hard time imagining the Twin Cities without the Vikings. I'm not saying they're going to leave. I don't even get into the meetings or anything about that. Mm-hmm. But I know how important that is on a Monday morning. I don't find many conversations or hear many conversations that don't say, what happened, or wasn't that great, or what, you know. I guess we do need a stadium. We do.
Well, Paul, you've been a credit to this organization and to this community for many, many years. It's always a pleasure to sit in front of you at all those games that were at the Metrodome, and look forward to seeing you Sunday afternoon when the Vikings take on the Green Bay Packers. We so appreciate your time here tonight.
Well, Mark, I enjoyed being with you, too. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. Paul Wiggins, senior consultant for the Minnesota Vikings. You're listening to Purple Pass. This is Mark Rosen on The Fan.
This has been Vikings Purple Past. You can hear Vikings Purple Past every Tuesday night this season. To learn more about the Vikings Purple Past, log on to Vikings.com.